Chapter 3. Elle était fille, elle était amoureuse. Malfilâtre. Ah, me, these poets, such a hurry. Goodbye, Onegin, time I went. Well, I won't keep you, have no worry, but where are all your evenings spent? The Larin place. What reckless daring, good God, man, don't you find it wearing, just killing time that way each night? Why, not at all. Well, serves you right. I've got the scene in mind so clearly. For starters, tell me if I'm wrong, a simple Russian family throng, the guests all treated so sincerely, with lots of jam and talk to spare, on rain and flax and cattle care. Well, where's the harm? The evening passes. The boredom, brother, there's the harm. Well, I despise your upper classes and like the family circle's charm. It's where I find more pastoral singing. Enough, old boy, my ears are ringing, and so you're off. Forgive me, then. But tell me, Lenski, how and when I'll see this Phyllis so provoking, who haunts your thoughts and writer's quill, your tears and rhymes and what you will. Present me, do. You must be joking. I'm not. Well, then, why not tonight? They'll welcome us with great delight. Let's go. And so the friends departed, and on arrival duly meet that sometimes heavy but good-hearted old-fashioned Russian welcome treat. The social ritual never changes. The hostess artfully arranges on little dishes her preserves, and on her covered table serves a drink of lingonberry flavour. With folded arms, along the hall, the maids have gathered, one and all, to glimpse the Larin's brand new neighbour, while in the yard their men reproach Onegin's taste in horse and coach. Now home's our hero's destination, as down the shortest road they fly. Let's listen to their conversation and use a furtive ear to spy. Why all these yawns, Onegin, really? Mere habit, Lenski. But you're clearly more bored than usual. No, the same. The fields are dark now. What a shame. Come on, Andriushka, faster, matey. Oh, these stupid woods and fields and streams. Oh, by the way, Dame Larin seems a symbol, but a nice old lady. I fear that lingonberry brew may do me in before it's through. But tell me, which one was Tatiana? Why, she who with a wistful air, all sad and silent like Svetlana, came in and took the window chair. And really you prefer the other? Why not? Were I the poet, brother, I'd choose the elder one instead. Your Olga's look is cold and dead, as in some dull Van Dyck Madonna, so round and fair of face is she. She's like that stupid moon you see up in that stupid sky you honour. Vladimir gave a curt reply and let the conversation die. Meanwhile, Onegin's presentation at Madame Larin's country seat produced at large a great sensation and gave the neighbours quite a treat. They all began to gossip slyly, to joke and comment rather wryly, and soon the general verdict ran that Tanyard finally found a man. Some even knowingly conceded that wedding plans had long been set, and then postponed till they could get the stylish rings the couple needed. As far as Lenski's wedding stood, they knew they'd settled that for good. Tatiana listened with vexation to all this gossip, but it's true that with a secret exultation, despite herself, she wondered too. And in her heart the thought was planted, until at last her fate was granted. She fell in love. For thus indeed does spring awake the buried seed. Long since her keen imagination, with tenderness and pain imbued, had hungered for the fatal food. Long since her heart's sweet agitation had choked her maiden breast too much, her soul awaited someone's touch. And now, at last, the wait has ended. Her eyes have opened, seen his face. And now, alas, she lives attended all day, all night, in sleep's embrace by dreams of him. Each passing hour, the world itself with magic power but speaks of him. She cannot bear the way the watchful servants stare or stand the sound of friendly chatter. Immersed in gloom beyond recall, she pays no heed to guests at all and damns their idle ways and patter, their tendency to just drop in and talk all day once they begin. And now, with what great concentration to tender novels she retreats, with what a vivid fascination takes in their ravishing deceits. Those figures fancy has created, her happy dreams have animated. The lover of Julie Wolmar, Malek Adhel and Delinard, and Werther, that rebellious martyr, and Grandison, the noble lord, with whom today we're rather bored, all these our dreamy maiden's ardour has pictured with a single grace and seen in all Onegin's face. And then her warm imagination perceives herself as heroine, some favourite author's fond creation, Clarissa, Julia, or Delphine. She wanders with her borrowed lovers through silent woods and so discovers within a book her heart's extremes, her secret passions and her dreams. She sighs, and in her soul possessing another's joy, another's pain, she whispers in a soft refrain the letter she would send caressing her hero, who was nonetheless no Grandison in Russian dress. Time was, with grave and measured diction, a fervent author used to show the hero in his work of fiction endowed with bright perfection's glow. He'd furnish his beloved child, forever hounded and reviled, with tender soul and manly grace, intelligence and handsome face. And nursing noble passion's rages, the ever dauntless hero stood prepared to die for love of good. And in the novel's final pages, deceitful vice was made to pay, and honest virtue won the day. But now our minds have grown inactive. We're put to sleep by talk of sin. Our novels, too, make vice attractive, and even there it seems to win. It's now the British muses' fables that lie on maidens' bedside tables and haunt their dreams. They worship now the vampire with his pensive brow, or gloomy Melmoth, lost and pleading, the corsair, or the wandering Jew, and enigmatic's Bogar, too. Lord Byron, his caprice succeeding, cloaked even hopeless egotism in saturnine romanticism. But what's the point? I'd like to know it. Perhaps, my friends, by fate's decree, I'll cease one day to be a poet when some new demon seizes me, and scorning then Apollo's ire, to humble prose I'll bend my lyre. A novel in the older vein will claim what happy days remain. No secret crimes or passions gory shall I in grim detail portray, but simply tell, as best I may, a Russian family's age-old story, a tale of lovers and their lot, of ancient customs unforgot. I'll give a father's simple greetings, an aged uncle's in my book. I'll show the children's secret meetings by ancient lindens near the brook, their jealous torments, separation, their tears of reconciliation. I'll make them quarrel yet again, but lead them to the altar then. I'll think up speeches tender-hearted, recall the words of passion's heat, those words with which, before the feet of some fair mistress long departed, my heart and tongue once used to soar, but which today I use no more. Tatiana, oh, my dear Tatiana, I shed with you sweet tears too late. Relying on a tyrant's honour, you've now resigned to him your fate. My dear one, you are doomed to perish. But first, in dazzling hope, you nourish and summon forth a sombre bliss. You learn life's sweetness, feel its kiss, and drink the draught of love's temptations as phantom daydreams haunt your mind. On every side you seem to find retreats for happy assignations, while everywhere before your eyes your fateful tempter's figure lies. The ache of love pursues Tatiana. She takes a garden path and sighs. A sudden faintness comes upon her. She can't go on. She shuts her eyes. Her bosom heaves. Her cheeks are burning. Scarce breathing lips grow still with yearning. Her ears resound with ringing cries, and sparkles dance before her eyes. Night falls. The moon begins parading the distant vault of heaven's hood. The nightingale in darkest wood breaks out in mournful serenading. Tatiana tosses through the night and wakes her nurse to share her plight. I couldn't sleep. Oh, nurse, it's stifling. Put up the window. Sit by me. What ails you, Tanya? Life's so trifling. Come, tell me how it used to be. Well, what about it? Lord, it's ages. I must have known 1,000 pages of ancient facts and fables, too, about evil ghosts and girls like you. But nowadays I'm not so canny. I can't remember much of late. Oh, Tanya, it's a sorry state. I get confused. But tell me, Nanny, about the olden days. You know, were you in love then, long ago? Oh, come, our world was quite another. We'd never heard of love, you see. Why, my good husband's sainted mother would just have been the death of me. Then how'd you come to marry Nanny? The will of God, I guess. My Danny was younger still than me, my dear, and I was just 13 that year. The marriage maker kept on calling for 2 whole weeks to see my kin, till Father blessed me and gave in. I got so scared, my tears kept falling, and weeping they undid my plait, then sang me to the churchyard gate. And so they took me off to strangers. But you're not even listening, pet. Oh, Nanny, life's so full of dangers, I'm sick at heart and all upset. I'm on the verge of tears and wailing. My goodness, girl, you must be ailing. Dear Lord, have mercy, God, I plead. Just tell me, dearest, what you need. I'll sprinkle you with holy water. You're burning up. Oh, do be still. I'm, you know, nurse, in love, not ill. The Lord be with you now, my daughter. And with her wrinkled hand, the nurse then crossed the girl and mumbled verse. Oh, I'm in love, again she pleaded with her old friend. My little dove, you're just not well. You're overheated. Oh, let me be now. I'm in love. And all the while the moon was shining, and with its murky light defining Tatiana's charms and pallid air, her long unloosened braids of hair and drops of tears, while on a hassock beside the tender maiden's bed, a kerchief on her grizzled head, sat Nanny in her quilted cassock. And all the world in silence lay beneath the moon's seductive ray. Far off, Tatiana ranged in dreaming, bewitched by moonlight's magic curse. And then a sudden thought came gleaming. I'd be alone now. Leave me, nurse. But give me first a pen and paper. I won't be long. Just leave the taper. Good night. She's now alone, all still. The moonlight shines upon her sill, and, propped upon an elbow writing, Tatiana pictures her Eugene, and in a letter rash and green, pours forth the maiden's blameless plighting. The letter's ready, all but sent. For whom, Tatiana, is it meant? I've known great beauties proudly distant, as cold and chaste as winter snow, implacable to all resistant, impossible for mind to know. I've marvelled at their haughty manner, their natural virtue's flaunted banner, and, I confess, from them I fled, as if in terror I had read above their brows the sign of Hades, "Abandon hope, who enter here." Their joy is striking men with fear, for love offends these charming ladies. Perhaps along the Neva's shore you too have known such belles before. Why, I've seen ladies so complacent before their loyal subjects' gaze that they would even grow impatient with sighs of passion and with praise. But what did I, amazed, discover? On scaring off some timid lover with stern behaviour's grim attack, these creatures then would lure him back, by joining him at least in grieving, by seeming, in their words at least, more tender to the wounded beast, and blind as ever, still believing, the youthful lover with his yen would chase sweet vanity again. So why is Tanya, then, more tainted? Is it because her simple heart believes the chosen dream she's painted, and in deceit will take no part? Because she heeds the call of passion in such an honest, artless fashion? Because she's trusting more than proud, and by the heavens was endowed with such a rashness in surrender, with such a lively mind and will, and with a spirit never still, and with a heart that's warm and tender? But can't you, friends, forgive her, pray, the giddiness of passion's sway? The flirt will always reason coldly. Tatiana's love is deep and true. She yields without conditions, boldly as sweet and trusting children do. She does not say, "Let's wait till later to make love's value all the greater and bind him tighter with our rope. Let's prick vainglory first with hope, and then with doubt in fullest measure we'll whip his heart, and when it's tame, revive it with a jealous flame. For otherwise, grown bored with pleasure, the cunning captive any day might break his chains and slip away. I face another complication. My country's honour will demand, without a doubt, a full translation of Tanya's letter from my hand. She knew the Russian language badly, ignored our journals all too gladly, and in her native tongue, I fear, could barely make her meaning clear. And so she turned for love's discussion to French. There's nothing I can do. A lady's love, I say to you, has never been expressed in Russian. Our mighty tongue, God only knows, has still not mastered postal prose. Some would that ladies be required to read in Russian. Dread command! Why, I can picture them, inspired, the Good Samaritan in hand. I ask you now to tell me truly, you poets who have sinned unduly, have not those creatures you adore, those objects of your verse, and more, been weak at Russian conversation? And have they not, the charming fools, distorted sweetly all the rules of usage and pronunciation, while yet a foreign language slips with native glibness from their lips? God spare me from the apparition on leaving some delightful ball of bonneted academician or scholar in a yellow shawl. I find a faultless Russian style like crimson lips without a smile. Mistakes in grammar charm the mind. Perhaps, if fate should prove unkind, this generation's younger beauties, responding to our journal's call, with grammar may delight us all, and verses will be common duties. But what care I for all they do? To former ways I'll still be true. A careless drawl, a tiny stutter, some imprecision of the tongue can still produce a lovely flutter within this breast no longer young. I lack the strength for true repentance, and Gallicisms in a sentence seem sweet as youthful sins remote, or verse that Bogdanovich wrote. But that will do. My beauty's letter must occupy my pen for now. I gave my word, but, Lord, I vow retracting it would suit me better. I know the gentle Parnes lays are out of fashion nowadays. Bard of the feasts and languid sorrow, if you were with me still, my friend, immodestly I'd seek to borrow your genius for a worthy end. I'd have you with your art refashion a maiden's foreign words of passion and make them magic songs anew. Where are you? Come, I bow to you and yield my rights to love's translation. But there beneath the finished sky, amid those mournful crags on high, his heart grown deaf to commendation, alone upon his way he goes, and does not heed my present woes. Tatiana's letter lies beside me, and reverently I guard it still. I read it with an ache inside me, and cannot ever read my fill. Who taught her, then, this soft surrender, this careless gift for waxing tender, this touching whimsy free of art, this raving discourse of the heart, enchanting yet so fraught with trouble? I'll never know. But nonetheless, I give it here in feeble dress, a living picture's pallid double, or Freischütz, played with timid skill by fingers that are learning still. Tatiana's letter to Onegin. I'm writing you this declaration. What more can I and candor say? It may be now your inclination to scorn me and to turn away. But if my hapless situation evokes some pity for my woe, you won't abandon me, I know. I first tried silence and evasion. Believe me, you'd have never learned my secret shame had I discerned the slightest hope that on occasion, but once a week I'd see your face, behold you at our country place, might hear you speak a friendly greeting, could say a word to you, and then could dream both day and night again of but one thing till our next meeting. They say you like to be alone and find the country unappealing. We lack, I know, a worldly tone, but still we welcome you with feeling. Why did you ever come to call in this forgotten country dwelling? I'd not have known you then at all, nor known this bitter heartache swelling. Perhaps when time had helped in quelling the girlish hopes on which I fed, I might have found, who knows, another, and been a faithful wife and mother, contented with the life I led. Another? No. In all creation, there's no one else whom I'd adore. The heavens chose my destination and made me thine for evermore. My life till now has been a token in pledge of meeting you, my friend, and in your coming God has spoken. You'll be my guardian till the end. You filled my dreams and sweetest trances, as yet unseen and yet so dear. You stirred me with your wondrous glances, your voice within my soul rang clear. And then the dream came true for me. When you came in, I seemed to waken. I turned to flame. I felt all shaken, and in my heart I cried, "It's he!" And was it you I heard replying amid the stillness of the night, or when I helped the poor and dying, or turned to heaven softly crying and said a prayer to soothe my plight? And even now, my dearest vision, did I not see your apparition flit softly through this lucent night? Was it not you who seemed to hover above my bed, a gentle lover, to whisper hope and sweet delight? Are you my angel of salvation, or hell's own demon of temptation? Be kind and send my doubts away, for this may all be mere illusion, the things a simple girl would say, while fate intends no grand conclusion. So be it then. Henceforth I place my faith in you and your affection. I plead with tears upon my face, and beg you for your kind protection. You cannot know, I'm so alone. There's no one here to whom I've spoken. My mind and will are almost broken, and I must die without a moan. I wait for you and your decision. Revive my hopes with but a sign, or halt this heavy dream of mine, alas, with well-deserved derision. I close. I dare not now reread. I shrink with shame and fear. But surely your honour's all the pledge I need, and I submit to it securely. The letter trembles in her fingers. By turns Tatiana groans and sighs. The rosy sealing wafer lingers upon her fevered tongue and dries. Her head is bowed as if she's dozing. Her light chemise has slipped, exposing her lovely shoulder to the night. But now the moonbeam's glowing light begins to fade. The veil emerges above the mist. And now the stream in silver curves begins to gleam. The shepherd's pipe resounds and urges the villager to rise. It's morn. My Tanya, though, is so forlorn. She takes no note of dawn's procession, just sits with lowered head remote. Nor does she put her seal's impression upon the letter that she wrote. But now her door is softly swinging. It's Grey Filatyevna, who's bringing her morning tea upon a tray. "It's time, my sweet, to greet the day. Why, pretty one, you're up already. You're still my little early bird. Last night you scared me, upon my word. But thank the Lord you seem more steady. No trace at all of last night's fret. Your cheeks are poppies now, my pet. Oh, nurse, a favour, please, and hurry. Why, sweetheart, anything you choose. You mustn't think, and please don't worry. But see, oh, Nanny, don't refuse. As God's my witness, dear, I promise. Then send your grandson, little Thomas, to take this note of mine to our neighbour nurse, the one you know, and tell him that he's not to mention my name or breathe a single word. But who's it for, my little bird? I'm trying hard to pay attention, but we have lots of neighbours call. I couldn't even count them all. Oh, nurse, your wits are all befuddled. But, sweetheart, I've grown old. I mean, I'm old. My mind, it does get muddled. There was a time when I was keen, when just the master's least suggestion. Oh, Nanny, please, that's not the question. It's not your mind I'm talking of. I'm thinking of Onegin, love. This note's to him. Now, don't get riled. You know these days I'm not so clear. I'll take the letter, never fear. But you've gone pale again, my child. It's nothing, Nanny. Be at ease. Just send your grandson, will you please? The day wore on. No word came flying. Another fruitless day went by. All dressed since dawn, dead pale and sighing, Tatiana waits. Will he reply? Then Olga's suitor came a-wooing. "But tell me, what's your friend been doing?" asked Tanya's mother, full of cheer. "He's quite forgotten us, I fear." Tatiana blushed and trembled gently. "He promised he would come today," said Lenski in his friendly way. "The mail has kept him, evidently." Tatiana bowed her head in shame, as if they all thought her to blame. 'Twas dusk, and on the table, gleaming, the evening samovar grew hot. It hissed and sent its vapour steaming in swirls about the china pot. And soon the fragrant tea was flowing as Olga poured it, dark and glowing, in all the cups. Without a sound, a serving boy took cream around. Tatiana by the window lingers. and breathes upon the chilly glass. All lost in thought, the gentle lass begins to trace with lovely fingers across the misted panes a row of hallowed letters, E and O. And all the while her soul was aching, her brimming eyes could hardly see. Then sudden hoofbeats. Now she's quaking. They're closer, coming here. It's he, Onegin. Oh, and light as air, she's out the back way, down the stair, from porch to yard to garden straight. She runs, she flies, she dare not wait to glance behind her. On she pushes, past garden plots, small bridges, lawn, the lakeway path, the wood, and on she flies and breaks through lilac bushes, past seedbeds to the brook so fast that panting on a bench at last she falls. He's here, but all those faces, oh God, what must he think of me? But still her anguished heart embraces a misty dream of what might be. She trembles, burns, and waits so near him. But will he come? She doesn't hear him. Some serf girls in the orchard there, while picking berries, filled the air with choral song, as they'd been bidden. An edict that was meant, you see, to keep sly mouths from feeling free to eat the master's fruit when hidden, by filling them with song instead, for rural cunning isn't dead. The girl's song. Lovely maidens, pretty ones, dearest hearts and darling friends, romp away, sweet lasses, now, have your fling, my dear ones, do, strike you up a rousing song, sing our secret ditty now, lure some likely lusty lad to the circle of our dance. When we lure the fellow on, when we see him from afar, darlings, then let's scamper off, pelting him with cherries then. Cherries, yes, and raspberries. Ripe red currants let us throw. Never come to listen in when we sing our secret songs. Never come to spy on us when we play our maiden games. Tatiana listens, scarcely hearing the vibrant voices, sits apart and waits impatient in her clearing to calm the tremor in her heart and halt the constant surge of blushes. But still her heart in panic rushes, her cheeks retain their blazing glow and ever brighter, brighter grow. Just so a butterfly both quivers and beats an iridescent wing when captured by some boy in spring. Just so a hare in winter shivers when suddenly far off it sees the hunter hiding in the trees. But finally she rose, forsaken, and sighing started home for bed. But hardly had she turned and taken the garden lane when straight ahead, his eyes ablaze, Eugene stood waiting, like some grim shade of night's creating, and she, as if by fire seared, drew back and stopped when he appeared. Just now, though, friends, I feel too tired to tell you how this meeting went and what ensued from that event. I've talked so long that I've required a little walk, some rest and play. I'll finish up another day.